Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 10:38 p.m. and that is Singapore time. And today is Wednesday, the 24th of August. Well, I'm certainly flying around a lot, and I kind of apologise. I was kind of not entirely sure. I was compass mentis last night when I was doing the audio for at least all of it. And when we look at what's been going on in markets, it's been really quite volatile. But what is important is that the S&P 500 is right in the region of the trend mean, and it's been a couple of years since we've seen the index trade below it, and that was back in 2015 and 2016. It was in 2016 then that things started to turn around. High yield spreads had been rising all the way through 2014 and 2015, then they started to come back down. We're in a very different scenario right now. It's much more it's less about credit than it is about interest rates. So interest rate policy is what is probably driving this reticence about earnings and what the Fed is likely to do. And then, of course, you have the trade war. That's not something we were worried about in 2014 or 2015 either. So there's a lot to think about from the perspective of an investor. And then, of course, we're in the middle of earnings season and we're coming toward the end of October. And October, historically, is one of the most volatile months of the year. It's also worth highlighting that if in the event that the S&P 500 does in fact hold the region of the trend mean, well, that's likely to set us up for a pretty storming fourth quarter. So we have to bear in mind that the fourth quarter and the first quarter of the year are, generally speaking, the best seasonally from the perspective of stock market investors. And we're coming towards the end of October, so it's generally speaking in November and December that people start to think about the Santa Claus rally. Well, it is rather important, therefore, whether the S&P does in fact find support where it is right now. Well, we had a pretty impressive rebound yesterday from the 2700 point level. Now, it did still close in negative territory, but it was considerably off its lows. Well, we're seeing some selling right off the open in here today. But this is the region of the trend mean. Now, we also have to be at least pay some due heed to the fact that we've had a failed upside break, and the dynamic of the failure is larger than the dynamic of the breakout, and that does raise the possibility that it could come back down and test the lower side of the range, which is around the 2550 area. So that's the next area of potential support in the event that this region of the trend mean does in fact decline. But I think it's also important to keep an eye on what's going on with the Nasdaq, because the Nasdaq does not have a failed upside break. It has paused in the region of this 7,000 area. This represents the upper side of that underlying range, and this is about where, if the share is going to find support, then this is really where it should be happening. I think it's also important to keep an eye on these high yield spreads, and they are particularly inert. The spread right now is at about 359 basis points. It has been expanding, but it is still very much within this range that has persisted for most of the last 2 years. I saw a graphic yesterday. I'll try and dig it up for the recording tomorrow. But it was of the quantity of debt that is medium high grade. In other words, it's really just one or two rungs above junk. There's an awful lot of it. The fact is that the quantity of debt that is in fact rated as junk is quite small. That's one of the reasons why we've had such an inert environment. But there's a lot of debt that is just one or two rungs above junk. So when we do start to see credit conditions tightening, then that's likely to result in downgrades, and then the pop in yields from newly downgraded debt is likely to be something that then will translate into higher high yield spreads, and higher high yield spreads are the kind of thing that do contribute to strife in the stock market, usually with about a 6-month lag. And of course, then it all depends on how high those spreads go. But we can see, for example, on this chart that they had started moving higher in 2014, and they had in fact broken out to new recovery highs by the beginning of 2016, when they really started to come back down. So that really gave us quite a significant lead before we saw anything other than until we saw something that looked like potentially even topping formations back in 2015 and 2016, because it was touch and go there for a while. If you remember back in those 3 years ago, that we were getting some certain definitely trend inconsistencies, but that really did help to ram home the point that there is no trend that doesn't have the occasional pause and consolidation. But when we look at the Russell, well, this is representative of the small and mid-cap sectors in a considerable number of countries, because the pattern that we have here is largely repeated in, for example, the MDAX in Germany and the FTSE 250 in the UK. And that's all, I think, this pattern of underperformance that we're getting in these indices that had previously been trending so very impressively, well, that's representative also of interest rate sensitivity. So that's something that I think is worth paying particular attention to, because interest rate sensitive sectors do appear to be underperforming here. Then, of course, we have to think about what is going on with China. And it's very easy to become rather tunnel visioned with regard to what's going on there, because investors think faith in the announcements that the administration are making is at a rather low ebb, considering that when you look at the news flow that came through over the weekend, that you had Xi Jinping saying that they have unwavering support for the private sector. Well, that didn't translate into a significant rally. Then they also cut taxes, and that's generally positive for the consumer, but that hasn't really translated into any kind of impressive rally either. The sequence of lower rally highs on the A shares remains very much intact. The big question, of course, is what is going to happen with the property sector? Reading a number of reports on various planes that I've been taking over the last few days, it's become apparent that one of the reasons why you've had such strife in the property market in China is because the property developers have been in rather a hurry to lock in as many pre-sales as they possibly can. It's in pre-sales that the property developers can really, or that's how they get the most of their capital to then go ahead and build. Well, there is the possibility that the administration in China is going to cut off that route of funding and ban pre-sales. Well, that's going to make it rather difficult for property developers to get projects off the ground. So that's cutting off another source of funding for property developers, and that's not especially good news. Well, the Shanghai Property Index has bounced from around the 5,000 level, but this is a rivetingly consistent downtrend. It still hasn't poked back up into the overhead trading range. There is an oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but golly, it's got a lot of work to do to really demonstrate anything other than just short-term support in the region of that 5,000 area. But one of the other points is that China now represents a rather significant weighting within the MSCI emerging, but that weighting is due to increase. And the relative weakness of Tencent is also something that is worth considering because of the fact that it is the largest weighting in the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. And it has a double source of supply within the index because of the rather large holding that Naspers has in the share. and this continues to represent a consistent downtrend. There's no real sign that selling pressure is ebbing here. So I think that's also one of the things that is weighing on the market. But China is not the only country within the emerging market sector. And India has also pulled back below the trend mean, and this is really the first time it's traded below it for any kind of period of time since the beginning of 2017. There have been occasions over the course of the last decade when it has dropped below the trend mean, and we know that India is susceptible to occasional bouts of volatility. But India also has a lot going for it, because what's going on right now is they're weighing on the banking sector and trying to get them to clean up their bad loans. Well, eventually that is going to represent a reset of the credit engine within the economy, and then that is likely to represent the next real bull case for the market. But the more important point in the short term is that this process is not over yet. So we can anticipate that it is going to take a while longer. And the Bombay Banks Index is still trading below the trend mean. And of course, the weakness of the rupee is also an important consideration. But it's not as if the rupee is accelerating lower, and it has been rallying over the course of the last few days. But it's hard to make a very bullish prognostication about just about any of the emerging market currencies, particularly in Asia, when you have the renminbi starting to test the lows put in at the beginning of 2017. Considering that we have additional tariffs that are expected on the 1st of January up to 25%, there is a very strong likelihood that the Chinese are going to devalue their currency in order to act as a buffer against the tariffs on the domestic economy. So that, I think, is one of the issues that is weighing on the rest of those Asian currencies. When we look at the JP Morgan Asia Dollar Index, well, this is coming back down towards the lows seen at the beginning of 2017, but it's still a very consistent decline, and there's no real evidence that this area is going to represent anything other than just the potential for some steadying. There is, I mean, if we were to just imagine that we were sitting in the capital of an Asian country and saw that there was a high likelihood that the Chinese were going to devalue their currency, well, you wouldn't have much choice but to do the same thing, because to do otherwise would be to just tolerate an uncompetitive environment for your own economy. So that is, I think, weighing on a significant number of countries. Then, of course, you have the potential, too, that very significant companies in South Korea and Taiwan are going to have to start moving some of their productive capacity out of China, and that's going to be rather costly. Well, we look at, for example, the Korean won, which has been largely ranging in a rather inert manner for the past decade, but the dollar is now consolidating above the trend mean. Well, when we start to look at what's going on in Europe, well, the deterioration that we're seeing in European banks and European stocks, well, that is also translating into the European currency. And when we look at this price action, it got right up to test the region of the trend mean and failed. Now it's coming down to test the lower side of the range, but this doesn't look like a bullish chart. It looks like the euro is going to trade weaker from here. Then if we turn that around and simply look at the dollar index, well, it has been firming from the region of its trend mean, and it's pushing back up towards the upper side of this range. But I think the most important thing that it has done in a year has been to break that sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of 2017. But also, I think it's worth taking a look at the longer term chart, because this range looks like a first step above the base. And there is the potential here that the next significant move in the dollar is up to 100, and who's to say that it won't break out from there? considering that when we think about where the real challenges are, well, China has certainly got challenges, and its currency looks like it's going to get weaker. And Europe has challenges. And it isn't simply that you have this threat from the Italian government and the potential for for Italian yields to move higher from here. If we were to simply strip the name and the scale off of the chart, this looks like a clear bullish pattern. And we have a very, I think it's a beautiful teaching example of a first step above the base. So that suggests to me that we haven't even begun to see the extent to which Italian yields can rally. And that's likely to represent a significant challenge for Europe. Europe really does need to beat the depression, or not the depression, but the deflation genie, put it back in the bottle and start to ignite inflationary pressures. It also needs to do something about the millions of people that are unemployed, and this has been an intransigent problem for Europe for decades. So the way to do that is fiscal stimulus, but Italy is not going to, well, they're definitely going to go ahead and do it. It's going to be self-destructive for Europe to sanction Italy. Therefore, they would be much better off swallowing their pride and all engaging in not just quantitative easing, but fiscal stimulus together. It's probably going to take a crisis in order to come around to that idea, and most particularly within Germany. And we're probably just not there yet. And that's part of the reason why these banks are deteriorating. But I think it is also rather important that we have to pay attention to the fact that global banking sectors are all deteriorating. It's not just that you have weakness in the European sector, but the S&P 500 banks index has broken down from its most recent range. Then I remember, and it stuck in my mind recently, but I remember the last time I was in London, I was in the East End, and I saw on one of the building sites that it had been funded by Bank of the Ozarks. And the only time I'd ever heard of the Ozarks was from the Netflix show by the same name. And what we now see with the Bank of the Ozarks is an example of another company that had gone out and borrowed a pile of money and tried to turn what was essentially a very small regional bank into a global player, and now it's just not working out very well. That they went from a share price in the region of about 4 or 5 back in 2009 to over 50, and it did accelerate to get up there, lost momentum. You have a massive reaction against the prevailing trend that gave way into this very volatile type 3 top formation, and now it is completing it. Well, there is a significant risk that this bank is going to go bust. So that's something that we have to, I think, also pay due heed to, that some of the companies that borrowed a pile of money in an effort to attain global domination are going to go bust. Well, of course, the two big ones are Netflix and Tesla. Well, Netflix is in the rather difficult position that people like me are getting bored with their content, and then, of course, there are the other people that are churning through their content as binge watchers. So they have to continue to borrow money in order to create new content. Then I was chatting with someone on the plane who was the person who arranges the travel schedule for all of the Netflix executives in India. India is the country that Netflix has to break into if it is going to attain the kind of growth numbers that it requires in order to sustain its growth. and for the share to continue to bounce from the region of the trend mean. There is no denying that the share accelerated. It doubled in the first half of this year. Then we had the massive reaction, and now we're getting a first step below the top. It absolutely needs to hold this region of the trend mean, or it is going to look rather dangerous. Then Tesla is the share everybody loves to hate, but it rallied rather impressively yesterday. Well, one of the things that Tesla has in its favor is that it already has a battery factory. You can argue that it doesn't actually own any of the plant inside the factory, that's all owned by Panasonic, but it does have a battery factory at its disposal, and that is not something that all of the other auto producers have. And we can debate all day about the quality of the cars that are being delivered, and that they need servicing after only owning them for 3 weeks. But Tesla has been holding its range, whereas we're seeing downtrends in a significant number of others. And Daimler now is right in the region of its lows from 2016. What's also interesting about Tesla is that it is now dominating the sedan market, but a lot of other companies have decided they're not going to do sedans anymore. There's a lot more money in SUVs. But even Ford here, which on the face of it has rather low valuations with a PE of 6 and a dividend yield of 7, well, it's continuing to fall because people are speculating that the Ford family are going to have to start missing some of their dividends. And it's probably going to decline after they cut the dividend, because they're almost certainly going to cut it, but then it could quite likely be a buy subsequently. Against that background, well, there's the potential that Tesla is the worst of a bad bunch, that we're seeing selling pressure right across the automotive sector. And part of the reason for that is perhaps we have seen peak car, that there are plenty of cars that people have bought over the last few years. Interest rates are starting to rise, which means that paying for leases is going to become more expensive. And then there is the fact that all these companies are intent on building lots more electric vehicles, but they don't make any money from those vehicles. So that is also weighing on their fortunes. This looks like a very sick sector, and it is we're probably a long way from a major turnaround here. Now, when we look at the commodities complex, gold prices having attempted to break on the upside yesterday, they weren't quite able to hold all of the advance. They're in very mild upward territory in here today, but certainly nothing in a dynamic manner. Where we had the very clear downward dynamics yesterday was in Brent crude, and that has now pulled back very sharply below that $80 area. It has paused around the $75 area, and this is approximating the region of the trend mean. So this is about where, if oil is going to find support, then this is the area it needs to happen at. Well, if it fails here, well, then that's going to break the downtrend, the uptrend, and then there's the possibility that we're going to move into a much more volatile environment. But it would certainly take the wind from the sails of some of the more successful energy producing shares. Well, Royal Dutch Shell, for example, has now also pulled back below the trend mean, and it's coming back towards this 2400 P level. That's the region of the upper side of the underlying long-term range, but it's also where the progression of higher reaction lows is. So this is a rather important area where it needs to demonstrate support starting to come back in. Then when we look at the bond markets, Bloomberg has introduced, I think recently, somewhat more smart ticker reading, but the 10-year yield is starting to pull back in here. Well, That's representative of some of the volatility that we're seeing on the stock market. But the very big question for yields is whether the move above 3% is going to hold. This is a rather key level here, and the big question is whether the breakout from this 7-year base formation is going to hold. That's the basis on which the entire bear market hypothesis for bonds it rests, really. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.